For the last 2 years, I have had the privilege...
And we've had the hard work!
The privilege, as I say, to represent you in Parliament.
Yes, and what of it?
You're a thorough-paced reformer.
You all know me as a thorough-paced reformer. And...
An upholder of England's honour.
And an upholder of England's honour. Yes. And a thorough-paced reformer.
And a thorough-paced buffoon!
The back to Gorsy Castle! That's right, try reforming that!
No!
Tell you what, here's a thorough-paced egg to take with you!
Gentlemen! Oh!
Are you right there?
Dear, what's the delay closer still?
They've had a recount. It's closer than I thought. We got Ready Palm to vote for us, by the way.
Ready Palm?
Publican of the Brown Bear.
What shifted him? Did he hear my speech?
No, Sir Roger, not certain that he did. But he was persuaded, nonetheless.
Silence, please. Silence!
Muppet.
Sir Roger?
Silence, please, for his worshipful the mayor.
You think you won, do you?
Yes, I do, actually.
You've got something on your face, Muppet. Egg, I should imagine.
It is my special duty as your mayor to announce to you the result of the election for the parliamentary seat of Barchester as follows. Sir Roger Scatcherd.
Liberal.
378. Gustavus Arthur Moffat. 376. I hereby declare Sir Roger Scatcherd
the winner!
You've heard the result, I suppose?
Yes, Frank.
Disappointing, eh?
It is, dear boy, it is. But I've no wish to talk about politics.
Have you not?
Frank, the guests are beginning to go from Courcy Castle, so I really think that you should make it plain to Miss Dunstable exactly what your intentions are. You and she enjoy each other's company, that's clear. Indeed, if I may say so, there has thus far been rather too much boisterousness between the two of you. Too much laughter.
Oh.
All that, dear boy, must be laid aside. It is time for you to become earnest about Miss Dunstable. So I would urge you to go and see her straight away and make everything plain.
Yes, Aunt.
Good. Don't delay. And don't be too noisy.
So, all our jolly sport is to come to an end.
Oh,
I really am a little melancholy about it.
Melancholy? Oh, yes, you look so.
Lady de Courcy must be thoroughly glad that I am going, for I think you and I have got on far too well and have treated your aunt most infamously. I sometimes wondered if she was going to throw me out.
I wish she had done, Miss Dunstable, so that I could have joined you in your exile and shown you how much I love you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gresham. You know, of all my nights, you say by far the prettiest things.
Of all your nights? Must you talk that way when we are about to part?
My dear Mr.
Miss Dunstable, you don't in the least understand what my feelings are.
Well, if I don't, then I hope I never shall. I thought I did. I thought they were the feelings of a good, honest, true-hearted friend. I have become very fond of you, Mr. Gresham, and I should be sorry to think that I did not understand your feelings.
Oh, Miss Dunstable, I wish you were fond of me. Miss Dunstable, give me your hand.
No, Mr. Gresham. No. I see no reason why you should want me to do that. I hope you're not intending to make a fool of yourself.
I am a fool. A man is always a fool when he is in love.
Now, Mr. Gresham, listen
to me. Miss Dunstable.
And please, Do not interrupt. You were on the point of making a profession of love. But it would have been a false profession, as you well know. You do not love me. Nor is it possible that you should. I am neither young nor beautiful. I have nothing that could persuade you to love me. Except my wealth.
No, Miss Dunstable. It's not your wealth.
But I rather fear that it is, Mr. Gresham. I like you so very much that if money and money alone were to make you happy, I would heap it upon you.
Miss Dunstable.
But it grieves me to think that you, Mr. Gresham, so young, so bright, should have looked for it in this way.
I have never thought of your money. You are mistaken.
Well, if I am, I humbly beg your pardon. But how can I be? Mr. Gresham, I well know why Lady De Courcy invited me to Courcy Castle. How could I help knowing? She's so much lacking in cleverness and guile that she has unwittingly told me her secret 10 times a day or more. But each time that she has done so, I have told myself, well, Mr. Gresham is honest at least.
And am I not?
I could laugh at her, or at least laugh behind her back. Laugh at anyone who supposed they could get money out of me, who considered me a simple idiot who was there for the taking. Laugh, for instance, at the Honourable George De Courcy, who, though we have shared the same roof these past weeks, thought he would propose to me by letter. And by letter was refused. I could laugh at them all, Mr. Gresham, because I believed I had one true friend at Courcy Castle who would laugh with me. Oh, Mr. Gresham, would you sell yourself for money? Have you let your aunt persuade you? Have you forgotten your soul?
Miss Dunstable, oh, I have behaved very badly, I know. But I assure you, I never intended to sell myself.
Did you never look at me and calculate me as balance at your bank?
No.
Did you never gloat over me as a bird of prey gloats over some poor creature that will soon be carrion beneath its claws?
No.
Did you never intend to make me your wife?
No. Never for a moment, I sweared.
Good. Good. Then what did you intend?
I suppose that, in part, at least, I wished to tease my aunt by pretending to go along with her scheme. I wished to make a fool of her.
Well, there's merit in that, at any rate. And what else did you wish?
Yes, well,
you wished to make a fool of me.
I'm very sorry, Miss Dunstable.
Oh, I wouldn't be. I can forgive that. At least you are not being greedy. There. Good. I think we're friends again, Mr. Gresham.
Oh, I hope we are.
It's so nice to have a friend like you.
Well, you young people?
Well, Aunt De Courcy?
Is everything satisfactory?
Oh, yes, Lady De Courcy. Indeed it is. Your nephew and I have got to know each other so much better tonight.
I am not to marry Miss Dunstable or her money. I gave Mother the news as soon as I returned to Greshamsbury. She was bitterly disappointed. I have also told Father. He was disappointed too, perhaps. But not bitterly so.
I gather, my dear, that the acres of Greshamsbury are not to be reclaimed by the ointment of Lebanon.
That seems to be the case. You take great delight in the outcome, no doubt. You were ever opposed to anything that I or Lady De Courcy might desire.
My dear Arabella, believe me, no one would be more relieved than I if Frank could find himself a girl with a fortune. For if he doesn't, then I wonder how he's going to live. But he has time yet, I suppose.
Oh, he has time, Mr. Gresham. He has time to make an utter fool of himself if he chooses. He shall not, however, be encouraged to do so while he is staying at Greshamsbury.
Frank doesn't yet know, I take it. I mean, about Mary Thorne being required to stay away from here.
Well, I at least have not informed him. And the longer he remains ignorant about this business, the better, I think. He is the sort of young man, I'm afraid, to be particularly excited by what is specifically denied him, and to pursue it all the more vigorously. Do you know yet when he is going to Cambridge?
Tomorrow, he says.
Tomorrow? Excellent.
In the past, Arabella, I don't think you much cared about Frank studying at university. I'm glad you have become convinced of the benefits. Perhaps Mary could be allowed back here when Frank is away.
Oh, no, Mr. Gresham. That would be dangerous, for Frank might drop in on us without warning. No. This is the best course. And if you do not find it to your liking, Mr. Gresham, you may wish to ponder upon the reason why it is necessary, why our son must take such care about choosing a wife, why it is that there is no money for him to inherit. You might also reflect that it was you, not I, who first encouraged Miss Thorne to come to our house and to think of herself almost as part of the family.
Well, I have no regrets in that regard.
And you should remember also that it was you, not I, who made her uncle a friend, taught him to think himself a fit match for the aristocracy.
Now, that is quite absurd.
Our present difficulties, Mr. Gresham, are all of your making. And now you are vexed because an attempt is being made to solve them.
Arabella!
I have a headache, Mr. Gresham, a chronic headache. I'm going to my room.
I said I would write to you, did I not? And I decided that I would write sooner, not later. For that evening, dear Frank, after we had become friends again, you told me of the love you have for a young lady. Dear Frank, though I was never favoured in such a way myself, I think
that there must be a kind of heavenly beauty in a love that is young and true. So I am writing to ask you to be true to your young lady, Frank, if you truly love her. Be true to your vows, and never, never forget her. No, Miss Dunstable. Dear, sweet, kind Miss Dunstable. I shan't forget her. I promise.
Brandy, closer still?
I won't, thank you.
Well, I will. Your health.
Thank you, Sir Roger.
And mine. And in truth, closer still, I haven't felt so good for a long, long while. This parliamentary life suits me, I think.
Yes, I think it does. Sir Roger, forgive me. I came to give you some news, and I must give it. You may recall, regarding the election...
Oh, I recall a lot about that. I recall winning it.
There was a publican, a fellow named Reddypalm.
Oh, what of him?
At the last minute, he voted our way. Could be said to have swung it for us.
Yeah, well...
Well, earlier on polling day, one of our men paid Reddypalm a bill that was due to the fellow.
Oh, we should all pay our bills closer still, sooner or later.
We should, yes. But the difficulty here is with the timing of the payment, and with the fact that the money was owed to Reddypalm by Mr. Hughes, the Liberal who stood against Moffat at the previous election. They're charging you with bribery, Sir Roger.
What?
It's an unfair charge. It's a malicious charge. But I fear they'll make it stick.
This is all so very hard on you, dearest Mary.
Well... It cannot be helped.
Oh, but it could have been helped, if only my brother hadn't been so very cruel and unkind.
I'm sure he did not mean to be cruel or unkind. Quite the contrary. He said things to me without thinking, that's all.
And now, as a result, you have been banished. You must be very lonely when your uncle is away on his calls.
Well, just a little, perhaps. But I shall get over it, Beatrice. Here at home, I am monarch of all I survey, and I have you to visit me. And yesterday your father came and said how sorry he was. I suppose what makes it worse, though, is that everyone in the village must know that I've been banished. And must know why as well.
Oh, Mary. How could Frank have behaved like that? How could he? And I do believe there is no change in him.
Is there not, Beatrice?
When he came back from Courcy Castle, he was talking about you constantly. Oh, and he asked me if I would give you a message.
Did he?
Yes. It was very fortunate, don't you think, that you'd gone to stay with Patience's aunt, for otherwise his folly might have reached new heights. Mary, dearest, I would so love it if it could all be different. If Father had money and Frank were free to marry as his heart directed him. As things are, though, it would be utter madness.
Yes.
He said that he would never forget you. That was his message.
Mama, I have received a letter from Gustavus. Mr. Moffat.
Yes, my dear.
He wrote concerning the wedding.
Oh, Augusta, he has surely not postponed it a second time.
No, Mama. No, he has not.
Well, that is a relief. It is very troublesome, you know, to be making arrangements and then unmaking them. And what did he have to say then, my dear, with regard to the wedding?
There will be no wedding, Mama.
No wedding? Oh! No wedding?
No, Mama.
But why?
He does not say. At least, I do not think he does. It's a very long letter, a very elaborate letter, in which he is extremely apologetic, Mama. But I am unable to find in the letter any kind of explanation.
Oh, misery! Misery! I had such hopes for you, for your brother, and now nothing! Frank is not to marry Miss Dunstable, and you are not to marry Mr. Moffat. Oh, of course, Mr. Moffat is not at all as wealthy as Miss Dunstable, but it would have been a fine match for you, Augusta. It would. You are bearing the disappointment very well, my dear.
Thank you, Mama.
You are not in shock, I hope?
No, Mama. I don't think so.
A good evening to you, sir.
And to you.
Gustavus! Moffat! Mr. Moffat!
Who is it?
Come over here, would you?
Excuse me, but do I know you, sir?
It's me, Frank Gresham.
Oh, Mr. Gresham, well, this is a happy coincidence.
No, neither happy nor a coincidence. I made the journey specially to see you. And I bought this whip specially too.
What?
You are a scoundrel, sir. You are a scoundrel and a blackguard.
Now, Mr.
You deserve to be horsewhipped, sir. And you shall be horsewhipped.
No!
Yes, Moffat, yes!
No! No, help! Help! Stop, please!
Stop! I have barely begun!
No, help!
Greshamsbury has become very excited about Moffat's horsewhipping. For a while, I gather, the Gresham ladies were convinced that Frank had killed the wretched man. Perhaps it was wishful thinking. And Squire Gresham thought that his son had been exceedingly rash, but at the same time he was exceedingly proud of him and exceedingly glad that Moffat had been humiliated. So much then for Mr. Moffat. So much for England's honour. And as for his political rival, poor Scatcherd has been found guilty of bribery. The verdict has hit him very hard.
Thorn, I was looked at yesterday. Dr. Rearchild came. He said I was going on nicely.
Dr. Rearchild, yes.
He said, I have a wonderfully strong constitution.
Oh, that's true. It must be strong, Scatcherd, to take what you throw at it. I'm very sorry about this bribery business.
Oh, I wouldn't be too distressed, Doctor. I'm not. No, I'm well out of it, I assure you. 3 months I was in Parliament, that's all, but it was quite long enough, thank you. A very profitless profession, Thorn. I don't recommend it. Well, anyway, I can always try again in 5 years' time, if I'm so inclined, can I not? No. No, perhaps I can't at that.
I'm very sorry, Scatcherd.
That was my chance, I think. And because of some publican I'd never met who had an unpaid bill. I'll tell you, Thorne, it was very, very different being in the House of Commons. Money's given me little in this life. I was no better off, in a way, with my £300,000 than when I was breaking stones for 3 and 6 pence a day. But going into the House, being led up and shaking the Premier's hand now, that was different. I felt I'd achieved something. I really did.
And Lady Scatcherd, whatever Dr. Rearchild may have told you, because perhaps he could not tolerate your grief, is it not better that you should know the truth?
Yes. Yes, I suppose so.
And the truth is that you must not hope.
Oh!
It would be cruel to bid you do so.
Oh, is there no chance of recovery at all?
I fear not, Lady Scatcherd. Not as far as my knowledge goes.
But if he were to be forbidden his brandy? Well, he's been drinking more than ever, you know, since he lost his seat in Parliament.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm sure. But it doesn't much matter now. He might try to keep down the quantity, but it doesn't signify, I'm afraid. And he will always find a way of getting round you. One thing you must do, Lady Scatcherd, is to get a message to your son.
Yes. Yes, I must do that. Oh, me. Poor Louis.
Where is he at present?
He's in London, I think. Unless he's in Brighton. Oh, me.
You must send a telegraph to him.
Yes. Yes. Oh, dear. How will we manage? The poor boy. The poor boy.
Louis.
Yes, Father.
Louis, I've not done by you as I ought to have done. I know that now.
Oh, well. Oh, I shall be all right, I dare say. Besides, it isn't too late.
It is, Louis, it is.
Oh, nonsense, Governor. You could change the will if you wanted. Make it so that I can inherit when I'm 23, say, rather than 25.
No, Louis.
Or you could remove the age restriction altogether.
No, no.
No?
I wasn't thinking about money. There are things besides money which a father ought to look to for his son. Oh, my dear boy.
Now, Governor, don't fret yourself. I'm fine.
It's that accursed brandy. That's what I'm afraid of. See what it's done to me?
You'll be well again soon, Father. But about a month or so, dare say.
Oh, my boy. I shan't be out of this bed till I'm put into a coffin. Oh, Louis, I wish you'd promised me you'd keep off the drink. I wish you would.
It's very little I take, Governor.
Oh.
No, it's just the odd one or two. I'm as right as a trivet.
I must go there again this evening. I'm sorry, Mary.
Oh, I shall be fine. Beatrice said she would drop by. And Patience, too, perhaps. Is Sir Roger's son at Boxall Hill yet?
He came yesterday.
Ah, you must tell me about him, Uncle.
Well, his name is Louis-Philippe. After the French king, you know.
Yes.
And he is 21 years old.
Yes, Uncle, but what is he like?
Like? Oh, I don't know. He's like a young man aged 21. No, he is rather short and slight, so he doesn't look much like his father.
Really, Uncle, you are the worst hand in describing that I ever knew. Is he like his father at all?
Oh, yes. He has inherited something from him.
Will he be good at making money?
I would say not. Though he may be good at spending it.
I suppose he'll be a baronet, won't he, when Sir Roger dies?
Yes, I suppose he will.
I wish I had met Sir Roger. I do so admire people who can push themselves in the world.
Yes. But you will never know him now, my dear.
I think it's a good enough will. It's as good as I can make it.
No, you must alter it, Scatcherd. You must.
Oh, must? Then I won't. Listen, Thorne. My sole concern is for my poor son's welfare. If Louis dies early, why, to tell the truth, I'm not that interested who gets the money. But he'll not die early. He'll live to be 25 and many more years beyond, I trust. You'll help him, won't you, Thorne?
Oh, certainly, if I can. How can I help him?
Use the power that a strong fella has over one who's weak. Do as you would if you had a son and you saw him going astray. If he were to marry before too long, marry a good woman, I mean, I think he'd fare best yet. But till that day, you must take care of him.
What I can do, I shall. I promise.
I'll have a glass from that bottle there.
Oh.
Oh, come, Doctor.
Will you have water with it?
Water? I shall not.
Here.
Oh, you have a confounded stingy hand, Doctor, when it comes to brandy. You never measure your medicines out in such light doses. Listen, Doctor. Your niece, Mary. My niece.
What of her?
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write her into the will. Refer to her specifically by name so there can be no confusion. She'll have the money for certain if poor Louis dies early.
Scatcherd.
But there's one condition. She must marry him.
What?
She must marry Louis. You must give me your word that you'll do all you can to bring about the marriage. And in return, her name will be in the will.
No, Scatcherd.
Why not?
It's impossible. Out of the question.
Why? Why, Doctor, is she such a pearl of such price that a man may not win her?
Well, she is a pearl of price. Of great price.
Oh, I'm sure you think so. But you must have a very poor opinion of Louis if you suppose that no girl might fancy being married to him. Heavens, Thorn, lady to a baronet, 10,000 a year? I mean, what is it you expect for this niece of yours?
A quiet heart and a quiet home. Not much more.
You'll not do this thing for me, then?
There's nothing I can do. Marriages can't be made. Not good marriages, at least.
You won't help me?
Not in this matter.
And by God, Thorn, your niece won't have a shilling of mine. Not a shilling, do you understand? I'm going to alter the will.
Do so by all means. I ask that you should. You may well change it for the better. I'll leave you now.
Yes, do. But remember, Thorn, you have deprived that girl of her fortune.
Thorn, I gather that Lady Arabella was here yesterday.
Yes, Mr. Gresham, she was.
And she spoke about Mary.
And she did. The present punishment is not enough, it seems. Mary must suffer still more.
I am so very sorry about it, Thorn.
Well, so am I. And sorry, too, if I was short with your wife. To be truthful, Mr. Gresham, I was very angry.
Yes, I can see that you might well have been. And so was she. You will not be surprised to learn that she has decided to dispense with your services.
I would have been surprised if she hadn't.
I'm afraid that Philgrave is to be her doctor now.
Ah.
Of course, Lady Arabella has the best of motives. With regard to her conduct towards Mary, I mean. Or at least she feels she has. She wants to do all she can to help her son and the family as a whole.
Perhaps she does. But I do not believe it is necessary in the process to treat Mary with such harshness.
No.
It is one thing to bar her from Greshamsbury House.
Dr. Ford.
But for Lady Arabella to attempt to interfere in the innocent pleasures of Mary's life, to deny her the friendship of your daughter, simply in case Mary should speak to her about Frank, or your daughter should pass on some word about him to Mary, that is another thing entirely.
Well, Lady Arabella does seem to think that Beatrice may be acting as a sort of go-between.
A go-between? That's quite absurd.
She also thinks, by the way, that you mean to encourage Mary with regard to Frank.
No, Mr. Gresham. I wouldn't encourage her. But I wouldn't get in her way, either.
You wouldn't?
No, indeed. Frank would be very fortunate, in my view, if he would have such a wife as Mary.
Yes. That is, she's a fine girl, Thorn. A fine girl.
But...
Oh, Doctor. This is a sorry business.
And when is the funeral to be?
Friday week.
in Barchester Cathedral.
You're being very brave, Lady Scatcherd.
Brave? Oh, no, Doctor. Though I'm not so bad when there's company.
Has Louis left?
Yesterday. Gone back to London. He has friends there, you know. But he says I may stay on at Boxall Hill.
Well, that's good of him.
For a consideration, he says.
Ah.
I hope he won't give you any trouble.
Trouble, Lady Scatcherd?
Over money matters. You've to deal with all that, I understand.
Yes.
He likes to have money, does Louis? I wouldn't want him pestering you, Doctor.
Well, we'll see if we can each of us be accommodating.
I fear Sir Roger placed a big burden on you.
Oh, there's nothing in the will that he and I had not talked about. Indeed, it is precisely as your husband described it to me some months ago. Nothing has been changed. Nothing at all.
I am at Boxall Hill. I should have liked to have visited here before now. Should have liked to have met Sir Roger Scatcherd. But Uncle was never much keen on that notion. Things are different now, though. Sir Roger is dead, and Uncle says that Lady Scatcherd is very lonely, and that she has asked several times if I might come and keep her company. Well, and without Beatrice to visit me at home, have I not become lonely, too?
Now, what will you have, Miss Thorne? Roast fowl?
Oh, that would be very nice, yes.
With bread sauce, and just a few sausages, and baked potatoes. Or would you rather have them mashed? But if you prefer boiled fowl to roast, I hope you'll say so. And there's lamb in the house as well, you know. So it's whatever you'd like, Miss Thorne.
Oh, thank you, Lady Scatcherd.
And then after the meal, we must put our minds to you going for a ride. The horses, you say, are too big for you.
I fear so, oh, but really...
I don't go riding myself, so I've never worried about these things. Well, we shall have to get you a pony, then. A fine pony.
Oh, Lady Scatcherd, you mustn't go to any trouble. I'd be just as happy with a donkey.
A donkey?
Or not to go riding at all.
Oh, no. You must go riding. Now, Miss Thorne, eat up. There's plenty more.
Thank you. But please, you must not go on calling me Miss Thorne. You are so very kind to me, and it seems so cold to be called that. My name is Mary.
Well, Miss Thorne...
Mary,
yes. I'm sure I'll call you anything you wish me to, Miss Thorne. And I do think Mary is the prettiest name in all the English language. My dear Roger loved that name.
Did he? Why?
He had a sister called Mary. Such a beautiful creature she was. And truth to tell, Miss Thorne... You are not at all unlike her.
Here we are, m'lady.
Look, Miss Thorne, look.
Oh, Lady Scatcherd.
Well, you said you'd be happiest with a donkey.
Yes, I did. You are so very kind.
She seems peaceful enough, doesn't she?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, please, m'lady, it's a he.
A he? Oh, the he's are as quiet as the she's, I hope.
Oh, deal quieter, m'lady, all the world over. And they're twice as useful.
That's good. That's very good. Do you think you'll be happy with her, Miss Thorne?
Him, m'lady.
Him, yes.
I think I'll be very happy, Lady Scatcherd.
Shall I leave him with you, miss?
Oh, yes, please. He and I must make ourselves acquainted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, miss. Thank you, m'lady.
I do so dislike being called my lady. I think people call me it to make fun of me.
Oh, no, I'm sure
they... Oh, I'd rather not be made a fool of for all the days of my life. Perhaps I'll drop it. Stop being a lady, you know.
Oh, but Lady Scatcherd, you mustn't think of such a thing. For the sake of your husband's memory, for the sake of all he achieved, you should be proud of the title. You must be my lady, and I must be Mary. Goodness, who can this be?
Her ladyship has gone to bed, Sir Louis. I fear we were not expecting you, my lord.
Well, I plan to be in Brighton, but I'm feeling a little out of sorts.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that, my lord. Oh, by the way, we have a visitor.
A visitor?
Yes, my lord.
Ah, indeed. A visitor.
Good evening.
And to you too.
You are Louis Philippe, I think.
I am.
My name is Mary Thorne, sir. Your lordship. I believe you know my uncle, Dr. Thorne.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm beginning to know him quite well. He's been up to London, bothering me.
I think he's been very concerned about your health.
Well, perhaps. I wish he'd be more concerned about my income. He holds the purse strings, you see, and has them tied a good deal too tight for my liking. You're staying here, I take it?
Yes. Your mother has been very kind to me, and very generous.
Well, I'm sure. Well, this is an unexpected pleasure. I trust you'll be staying a while.
I'm not certain.
Oh, but you must, by Jove. Well, you must stay a good long while.
Must I, Sir Louis?
Oh, yes, indeed, Miss Thorne. Oh, long enough at least for you and me to become thoroughly well acquainted. Do you know, I wasn't too excited about coming to this place again. But now I think the prospect is a great deal improved. As you see, I am much improved.
I think you are. And there was, of course, much improvement to be made. And there still is.
Oh, no, Doctor. I'm pretty well as good as new.
That you are not, Sir Louis. But you will be in tolerable health, I think, if you do as I have asked you and are prudent.
It's not the drink, Doctor. Not now. If it ever was. Well, I like to take a cherry brandy of an evening, you know, but...
But, Sir Louis...
Nothing much more than that. I'm on the quiet line. By Jove, yes.
Well, the matter rests entirely with you.
Yes, yes.
You must keep your lips from that accursed poison.
I will.
For if you don't, you'll have nothing in this world to look forward to.
Dr. Thorne, I aim to live, believe me. I'm talking of things I might look forward to. What is happening with Greshamsbury?
Greshamsbury?
Yes, the title deeds of the estate that were requested as a condition of the loan my father made.
That will all be settled by the lawyers, Sir Louis.
Oh, no doubt, and settled with a pretty fine bill, too. Now, I have a right to ask about these things, Doctor.
Of course you have.
There's at least £80,000 owing from that Gresham fellow, and £80,000 is no joke.
Indeed, it isn't, but I can assure you that the deeds will be secured by the end of the month.
Well, that's all right, then. I may not be of age yet... Well, not at least according to that confounded will, but that's no reason why I shouldn't know what's going on.
You shall know everything that I know, Sir Louis.
Good. And just who is this cousin of mine?
I'm sorry?
The one who's referred to in the will, who's next in line for the money.
Well, she is a young woman. The eldest child of your aunt.
Oh, lives in America, I suppose. Has she been told about the will?
No, Sir Louis. No, she has not.
Well, that's good. As I say, I aim to live. I wouldn't like to disappoint her.
I am told that Frank is back at Greshamsbury for his summer vacation. I had hoped, while he was gone, that I would not think about him too much. And yet I find that I have thought about him more and more as each long day has passed. But why should it not be so? Why should I not think of him and pray for him and dream of him? Why should I not admit the truth to myself and say with all my heart, I love him?
That before you were too far into your vacation, Frank, you and I might have a talk.
I have heard about Mary.
Well, it is about Miss Thorne.
I have heard that she has been banished from this house.
Beatrice told you, I suppose.
I have heard also that she and Beatrice have been forbidden from seeing each other, whether it be at the house or anywhere.
Frank, you must not be angry with me.
Mother, I cannot help but be angry.
You must not be duped by Miss Thorne. You must not.
Duped?
You must give her up. Promise me you will.
I will make no such promise. Indeed, since you press me, I will tell you fairly that my mind is made up. I will marry Mary Thorne.
No, no! No. Oh, heavens, you wicked boy, Frank! You're saying this purposely to drive me distracted.
I will marry her, if she will consent. Though I have no reason to hope that she will.
Oh, she'd consent if she were asked. The girl is doing all she can to catch you.
No, Mother, you wrong her. Wrong her most cruelly.
Oh, ungracious boy.
If there was any fault, it was mine. Mary has given me no encouragement. She has behaved exactly as you would have wished her to. And as a reward for that, oh, you have turned her out.
Frank, Frank, do you wish to see me die of a broken heart?
Oh, I want to make you happy, Mother, if I can.
Then you must give up this mad idea of yours. You must marry a girl with money, Frank. You must.
No, Mother. No. I made an ass of myself once before because of that idea, and I won't do it again. I'll take up a profession. I'll become a farmer.
A farmer?
Anything. But I won't marry money.
There's one other thing, Doctor. A bit of news that'll interest you.
Really?
Well, by Jove, I think it'll astonish you.
Really?
I'm intending to get married.
Married? I'm delighted to hear it. That's assuming, of course, that you marry well.
Oh, yes, I intend to do that.
Splendid. It was your father's eager wish, you know, that you should be married early.
Well, yes, that's very much what persuaded me.
Is there anyone in particular whom you have in mind to marry?
Yes, Doctor. There is, and since you've talked of my marrying well, I don't suppose you'll quarrel with my choice. I'm thinking of marrying Miss Mary Thorne.
What?
Your niece, Doctor. Well, you can hardly disapprove of her.
Now I confess I am astonished. Have you spoken to Miss Thorne about this?
Well, I have and I haven't. I mean, I've not exactly popped the question to her, but I've been doing the civil, you know. And if she's up to snuff, as I believe she is...
Up to snuff?
She'll know pretty well what I'm after.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Well, Frank. Good afternoon. A pleasant surprise.
Are you well?
I am, thank you. You've been at Boxall Hill, I suppose.
Yes, I've been treating the invalid, you know, Sir Louis.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm going there myself.
Indeed.
Lady Scatcherd is at home?
She is.
I understand that Mary is staying with her.
That is correct. Frank?
Yes, Doctor?
I do wish that... No matter. A good day to you, Frank.
And to you.
Come along, boy.
Mary!
Oh.
Hello?
Mr. Gresham.
Yes, Mr. Gresham. I'm here to pay my respects to you. And you must forgive me for not doing so before.
Not at all, Mr. Gresham. I came to Boxall Hill to be out of the way, you know.
Yes. Oh, Mary.
I hope all my friends at Greshamsbury are well. Is Beatrice quite well?
Yes, she is. We are all well.
Oh, I'm glad. Do you like my mount, Mr. Gresham?
I think he is a splendid beast, and a very fortunate one to have you for his rider. Mary, do you remember the last occasion that we were together?
Yes, Mr. Gresham, I do. You had just celebrated your birthday, your 21st.
That's right. And do you remember what I said to you?
I remember that you were very foolish, Mr. Gresham. Oh, you must excuse me. My splendid beast wishes to return to the stables.
Well, I think I can keep pace. Mary, I intend to repeat my folly, if folly it is. I told you on that day that I love you,
And I dare say I told you it very awkwardly. Perhaps I will be just as awkward a second time around. But you ought to believe me this time, now that you know that a year has not altered me.
A year should have taught you to be wiser. You should have learned by now that your fate and mine are not cast in the same mould.
Dearest Mary, I don't think I could ever learn that. Unless you yourself persuaded me. If you will not, or cannot, return my love, then I will go away. From Greshamsbury, I mean, so that you'll not be banished from all you hold dear. If I am nothing to you, I will go away. And I'll try to get over it as best I can. Have you no answer, Mary?
Forgive me.
Have you no word of comfort? Mary, you were always honest. Be honest now and answer me. Will you be my wife?
Mr. Gresham.
Just one word, Mary. Or, if you will not speak, here is my hand. Let it lie in yours.
Oh, Frank. Frank.
Oh, my love. My own Mary.
His own. Well, and may I not be? May I not, though basely born, be a fitting wife for Frank Gresham? Not so long ago, of course, I argued against a marriage of such a kind. Against good blood mixing with bad. But now, my heart does not find the argument quite so strong. Am I indeed to sacrifice my happiness, Frank's happiness too, on the altar of mere prejudice?
So, Frank, where did you go to?
I went to Boxall Hill.
Boxall Hill?
Mary Thorne is staying there.
Yes, I know. Was it wise to go there, Frank? And was it fair on Miss Thorne?
The fact is, sir, that I have made up my mind to marry Mary Thorne.
I see.
Hitherto she has refused me, but I now believe that she would be willing to be my wife. Do you have any personal objection to her as a daughter-in-law?
No, I have no personal objection as such. She's a fine girl. But, Frank, marriage to Miss Thorne would be, well, impossible.
No, Father.
What would you live on? How would you manage? You wouldn't wish to see your wife distressed and comfortless, surely.
No, but if I were to wait till I had found myself a profession...
Oh, Frank!
Father, I am pledged, and I won't go back. So what do you say?
Do you know anything at all about Miss Thorne's history? Her birth, I mean. Her parentage?
No.
Nor does she, I think. But you should be told it, Frank. Not so you might be turned from her, but because simply you should know that her birth was not such as would be becoming for a wife of yours or beneficial to your children.
If so, I should have been told it sooner.
Perhaps. But you see, I learned the truth from Dr. Thorne and promised him I would keep it secret. And I have not thought it right to break that promise till now. Well, Frank, Sir Roger Scatcherd, plain Roger as he was then, I mean more than 20 years ago when he was a stonemason in Barchester, he had a sister. She was named Mary. A woman of great beauty she was. And Dr. Thorne, who was also living in Barchester at that time, he had a younger brother, Henry Thorne. Henry was a companion of Scatcherd's, a drinking companion, and he became very attached to Scatcherd's sister, and said that he would marry her. She was a good woman, this Mary, but the devil tempted Henry Thorne to tempt her, and she was seduced. I'll have a little more wine, Frank, if you'd be so kind.
Yes, of course.
Well,
word spread that Mary Scatcherd was with child. And her brother, as soon as he heard, got himself drunk, sought Henry Thorne out, and beat him to death.
Good Lord.
That was how Dr. Thorne became known to my father, who in his position as county magistrate witnessed and was greatly taken with the energy and generosity shown by the doctor. For though Dr. Thorne at first was furious for vengeance against his brother's murderer, he soon came to understand the provocation that Scatcherd had been under, and he did what he could to help him, and to help Scatcherd's sister too. Paid for Scatcherd's defence, paid for Mary Scatcherd's needs and comforts. And when the trial was over, and Scatcherd was imprisoned, for 6 months, I believe it was, my father invited Dr. Thorne to Greshamsbury, and the doctor established himself in the village.
And Mary Scatcherd's baby was born?
Yes.
It was a girl?
Yes.
And she was called after her mother?
Yes. She was Mary. Mary Thorne.
Well.
With the mother's consent, Dr. Thorne took charge of the baby, and Mary Scatcherd married a former suitor of hers and went to America. This was all while Scatcherd was in prison. As for the little girl, she was brought up by Dr. Thorne.
And when she was older, she was permitted to come to Greshamsbury House.
Permitted, rather encouraged. Well, I encouraged her. And she became friends with your sisters, became friends with you, was taught music with the girls and French and other things, became a part of the family, and never knew the circumstances of her birth. Poor girl. She'll have to learn them some day.
Yes. But none of this makes any difference. It can't diminish my love for Mary, nor can it cause me to break my engagement. Father, I have promised myself to Mary Thorne. I shan't break that promise.
I assume you have heard about this engagement.
Yes, Mr. Gresham, I have heard about it. I have also heard that Frank is to go abroad for a while.
He is, yes, after he takes his degree. I thought it might help if he was given some time, if Miss Thorne had time as well, perhaps, to reflect and consider.
You mean Frank is to meet any number of beautiful and fashionable women on his travels, and as a result is completely to forget about Mary and his engagement?
Dr. Thorne...
It's an ingenious plan, I'm sure, and one which is bound to appeal to Lady Arabella.
But you think it won't work?
Wouldn't stake much money on it.
I am not permitted to write to Mary while I am gone. That is part of the agreed terms of my exile. But I will write to Miss Dunstable, which might help to keep me in good spirits. Oh, it will be very hard being away from Mary. But being away, I will at least gain some respite from the arguments and cheerlessness I have had to suffer at home. And will not my heart, while I am absent, become ever fonder still?
You should not be here, Beatrice. You and I should not be talking.
Oh, but I asked Mother if I might visit you today, because I have something very important to tell you, and she gave me permission.
Well, if Lady Arabella has allowed us to talk, then I am happy.
Oh, Mary, dearest, do not be cold. I have such happy news. Mary, I am to marry...
Oh, Beatrice!
I am to marry Mr. Oriel.
Mr. Oriel?
Are you not pleased for me?
Yes, yes.
And do you not think Mr. Oriel is a good man?
Oh, yes, I am certain he is. Is a day fixed?
The 1st of September. It might have been sooner, but we wanted to wait until Frank was likely to have returned. You will be one of my bridesmaids, will you not, Mary, dearest?
Oh, Beatrice.
You always said you would if ever I got married.
Yes, yes, I did, but things are all altered now, and that promise must be broken.
Oh, Mary. You'll come to the wedding, though.
No, Beatrice, I do not think I will. I do not think I can.
Mary!
I will never be among your family again, I fear. Never again enter Greshamsbury House, not at least until your brother is a married man, or I am a married woman.
But when I am married and have a house of my own, you'll come and see me then?
Yes, Beatrice. I shall come and see you then.
Shan't you be glad to come?
I don't know. There may be circumstances which even then will cause some friction between us.
What sort of circumstances?
You are going to be married to Mr. Oriel, to a man you love. Suppose I should wish to be married to someone whom I love.
Oh, I very much hope you will, Mary, someday.
No, Beatrice, I don't think you do. For it is your brother I love. And I love him as fondly, truly and tenderly as you love Caleb Oriel.
Do you?
Why are you surprised? You love Mr. Oriel, though you have known him hardly more than 2 years. Why should I not love Frank Gresham? Why should I not marry Frank Gresham when I have known him for so much of my life?
How much of Frank's exile is being spent among beautiful and fashionable ladies, I am not in a position to say. But his father, it seems, has acquired little evidence that Frank has progressed towards forgetting Mary. And now, I hear, there is an additional anxiety for Squire Gresham. Namely, Lady Arabella's health, which has not at all improved under Dr. Filgrave's supervision. I would help, or try to, if Lady Arabella were to ask for me. But she is not yet ready to do that. In desperation, the squire has sent for those two very eminent London physicians, Sir Lambda Mew Nhew and Sir Omicron Pi.
Well, Sir Lambda. Well, Sir Omicron.
Lady Arabella, we are able broadly to concur with Dr. Filgrave's diagnosis. Yeah,
but we are by no means satisfied with the remedy that he has proposed.
I see.
Nux vomica and cenopods are not, in our estimation, likely to be of much assistance in restoring her ladyship to good health.
Rather, your ladyship, we would recommend that you take one of these pills 3 times daily for 2 weeks.
Your husband mentioned another doctor, I think.
Yes, Sir Lambda, Dr. Thorne.
Was he your doctor prior to Dr. Filgrave?
He was.
We are doubtful, Lady Arabella, if the change has been a beneficial one.
Happy as we are to visit your ladyship whenever our London practice should permit us.
We would advise
very strongly
that you revert to Dr. Thorne.
It is very good of you to visit Ointment Hall. Are you staying long in town?
A few days, Miss Dunstable, that's all. And then it will be time for me to return home.
I must thank you for all your letters. I had great fun tracing your journey.
I'm afraid I missed Rome and the fat Pope.
A shame. But you are well-travelled, nonetheless. A true knight-errant?
I don't feel like a knight, errant or otherwise.
But you are still true, surely. You still love Miss Thorne, do you not?
Oh, yes. I love her. But, oh, what am I to do?
What are you to do? Why? Marry her, I hope.
Well, that was my hope, too. But I must live, and so must she. And I still have no idea how we shall find money, or if the estate will have to be sold.
Oh, come
or...
now, Frank. This is poor talk. Is the knight to be frightened by every lion that he finds in his path? If you want money, you'll have to earn it.
Yes. Yes, I must. I must strive to do that. Though I fear, as the son of a squire, that I'm not as well prepared for money-making as I should like to be.
You will learn, brave knight. You will learn how to earn. And listen, what you still lack, I will supply.
Oh, you are most kind and most generous. But as I told you that evening at Courcy Castle, I do not seek your money, dearest Miss Dunstable.
Well, whether you become rich or poor, or whatever may happen to the Greshamsbury estate, remember that nothing is more precious than your own heart. That is your estate, Frank Gresham, your very own, and you must not offer it for sale.
Oh.
But why must Sir Louis come here, Uncle?
Why? Because he wants money. From me, Well, that is from the Scatcherd estate. And also from Mr. Gresham, who owed money to Sir Roger.
Does he say how long he will be with us?
No, he'll stay until he's satisfied, I suppose. I tell you, Mary, if I had known at the start what strife and vexation all this business would bring me, I would have given Sir Roger a flat refusal and told him to look for an executor elsewhere. Is there another cup of tea, my dear?
Uncle, this will be your sin.